Hello, my fine friends. Welcome back to Destination Discourse. I'm your host, Stuart Butler. Very jet lagged. Just came back from eTourism Summit, but I'm not alone. I'm joined from the person I actually got to see and record in person with, Big Boy Adam. How are you?
You know what? It is great to be here today, even though I got in at 2:30 this morning from Vegas. But to spend some time with the British bomber today, it's a fantastic opportunity.
So do you want to share with the audience like what why you're calling me that, or are you just gonna let
I
it
kind of
sort
just
of
want to
simmer?
let it simmer.
I guess we'll have to wait till next week for you to come up with another name, and then we'll see if people can get the pattern. But yeah, okay. Well, we're not alone today, Adam. Although it was really good to see you in Vegas, and we got to record an episode of your podcast, the Destination Marketing Podcast, which I really enjoyed. So if you haven't been listening to that, please check out Destination Marketing Podcast with Adam Stoker. It's fun. It's more of an interview style than this one, but it's good. And yours truly is going to be on an upcoming episode there where we sort of talk a little bit about this show and some of the topics we've been talking about recently on the show. So that was a
Yeah,
lot of
we had
fun
a
to
good
actually record in
discussion.
person. But we are joined today with our second repeat guest. So we had Will Seckham's been on a couple of times, but now Amir Elon, you are our second. How about that? Welcome to the show, Amir.
Thank you, gentlemen. I am honored. I do have a question, though. Are
Yeah.
you two allowed to be physically in the same room together? Is that allowed to happen? Security get
With
called? I mean,
yeah,
what?
with the right security in Vegas, you can get a lot of private security. And
that's right.
We were able to make the arrangements we needed to, and it worked out.
Good.
Yeah, we just weren't allowed to fly together. You know, that was not allowed. Although we were in a car together for a brief moment, that was probably
we
high
were.
risk. This whole empire of Destination Discourse and our one or two listeners would you know, it would just go away all of a sudden. So we better not do that again. We better have new protocols next time,
No,
Adam.
you don't want to disappoint your fan. So that's it.
No, exactly.
Yeah, mom doesn't like it when we do that.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, if something did happen to us, Adam, she'd be more sad about the show going away than you going away. I mean, that's what she told me. So I don't know.
Ouch.
Did
I
that one
believe
cross a
that.
line? I don't know. I feel like that was kind of close to the line, if not crossed.
You may have crossed it with her, not with me.
Okay. Well, she'll let me know. She can tell us in the reviews. So, do we want to jump into this show? I know we're going to be talking about Canadian research and the stuff that Longwoods has just done. That's the topic today. But there's something sort of really blown up in the last few days, week or so, in Florida that I think we would be remiss not to cover in Stu's News. So, Adam, hopefully you're back. It looks like you're back in your home. Are you
No
ready?
more singing. No more
You
singing.
ready?
Let's
Yeah,
do
thank
this.
The Lord. Thank the Lord. You got the volume right. Are you going to double play it? Is this going to be the first time you nail Stu?
Let's see.
All right. I think we're good. Nailed it.
Look at that.
Wow.
Look at that.
It took 28 episodes in. You finally got it right.
I'm
so,
so
Amir,
proud of myself.
Amir, do you want to kick off this one? We're going to let you, as our esteemed guest, but also probably the most knowledgeable in the industry overall on this show today. Can you share a little bit about what's going on in Florida?
Well, we'll just call it news of the absurd, right?
Yeah.
The Florida legislature, which is wrapping up its session here shortly, I think they conclude on May 2nd, over the past week have introduced two bills in the Florida House that seem to have gotten a little bit of traction. One of the bills, and I forget the numbers, but who cares about bill numbers? One of the bills, in effect, would eliminate all the tourism development councils or tourism development authorities, depending on what county you are, in the state of Florida. And if you're familiar with the way destination marketing organizations and their funding mechanisms work in Florida, is that the tourism taxes collected go through a TDA or TDC, and they basically control those purse strings, and they allocate the funds to the local designated destination marketing organization, the CDB, whoever. For marketing, for the express purposes of tourism marketing promotion, they have some leeway with also like beach renourishment and a few other things that those funds can be used for. But generally, it is all tourism related activity, right? For the betterment and growth of the tourism economy in those communities. So that's bill number one. Bill number two basically says those funds don't have to be used for said activities anymore. Basically says that they could be used for anything else. And the legislators that are proposing this piece of legislation are saying, we want to accomplish property tax reform and give some property tax relief for our residents in the state of Florida. And of course, every taxpayer goes, hooray, lower my property taxes. So we'll just take all those tourism tax dollars and lodging tax dollars, and we will just funnel them back as deductions from your property tax bill, and everybody's going to be really, really happy. Except for that is tragically flawed, right?
Yeah, it's very short-sighted. It has a lot of assumptions baked in. I think the biggest one is that marketing is has no impact, right? That's the assumption. And
The sponsor of the legislation there, Stu, pardon me interrupting there, the sponsor of one of those two bills literally said it doesn't matter because those visitors will come anyway.
will you give you've got a really good comeback to that I know you posted on LinkedIn and you used before. Do you want to share that with the audience? Because I think it's
Sure.
brilliant.
So years ago in a past life, I was a director of tourism for the state of Ohio, and I was conducting some legislative meetings. It was budget season, having some one-on-ones with key members of House and Senate Finance Committees and so forth. And this actually, I wish I could take credit for being the founder of this approach, but it was taught to me by actually my now business partner, the founder of our company, Dr. Bill Siegel, because he actually used it in a conversation many, many years ago with a legislator, and he shared it with me, and I always remembered it. And wasn't planning on using it, but I was sitting in front of a Senate Finance Committee member's chambers and sitting with him, and no matter what I was saying, I had the numbers. I had the, this is the economic impact, this is the ROI of our programs, this is how we make a difference, boom, 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 boom. This is tourism being the tip of the economic development spear. I was using all the lines, doing all the moves, had all the numbers, the charts, the facts, the figures. And he just kind of kept sitting there like this. And in the end, he goes, well, you're well organized. You tell a good story there, Amir. But I got to tell you, your funding isn't a priority. If we didn't fund your program, people were still going to come to Ohio anyway. They're still going to, wouldn't they come anyway? Yeah. And I looked at him and I said, Senator, I got to ask you a question. You just had your election season wasn't long ago. You just got reelected to your current term, new term, right? Oh yeah, sure did. I said, let me ask you, when you were campaigning, did you put up some yard signs, take out some billboards, maybe little radio spots, maybe a little TV as things got closer? Yeah, of course. That's what campaigning is all about. And I said, yeah, and you won pretty handily, right? And he said, yeah, about a 20-point margin. Nothing to do with politics, but the other party barely ran a candidate,
Right.
pretty solid a district that went one way. I said, okay, so despite the fact that you're a pretty solid district for your party, you weren't a first termer, you were a recognized name and so forth, you put out all those billboards, you put out all those yard signs. I got to ask you, with all due respect, Senator, wouldn't they have voted for you anyway? Then I sat back waiting to get bounced out of his office, right? But he sat there for a minute and kind of had no expression on his face, and then started smiling. He said, touche,
Touche.
I get it, touche. And he shook my hand and left. And let me tell you, he never, I'm not sure I ever converted him into a champion
Right.
of tourism marketing, but he never questioned me again. And he never was an obstacle again in the way
Yeah.
in our
Well,
battle.
you did something perfect, right? Which is you fought an emotional argument with emotion instead of with logic, right? And like when you give facts and figures, if someone's just hard stance on a thing, it doesn't matter how many facts you throw at them, it's not going to change them. But you got to resonate with them at a story level, at an emotional level, with something that they can relate to. You got to use their truth against them. You can't create a new truth for them to take in, because th then they're going to have this cognitive dissonance that they're just going to resist. So really good job, really good job.
Oh,
So.
thanks. But Stu, you hit on something that really has always fascinated me because, we're an industry, our segment of the industry, we're marketers. We're marketers. We're creative people. We're innovative people. We specialize every day in creating campaigns that pull at the heartstrings, right? That's what we do really, really well. Make that emotional connect with our target audience in there. But yet, when we are under attack and we come to defend ourselves, we seem to approach right brain issues with left brain solutions. Like, here's the fact. Yeah, have the facts and figures. Listen, I run a research company. The facts and figures are important, but that should be the backup. That's the support. To hit your to
That's
follow
the
up your emotional argument, right?
right. That can be the foundation and what you fall back on, but it can never be what you lead with. It's not going to change their minds.
So right
Adam, you
now,
have something to
go
add?
ahead.
Yeah,
I've got some concerns with how the industry may receive this news. And so I hear what you're saying, Amir, about the two bills, and I think if our approach to this is, well, this is ridiculous, this is crazy, this is short-sighted. All of that is true. However, I think we've got to understand the other side of the argument. And so I would like to just take a moment and walk through a few things because, first of all, the first bill that you mentioned is saying that they're going to take the or eliminate individual TDAs and make sure that they're or and move that funding and remove that funding. That would then roll up to the state. Right. Now, without the second bill, my argument, if I was taking the other side, would be that's because they believe the state, by curating the funds, can do a better job promoting the destination as a whole than the individual DMOs within the state. So, number one, if I'm a small DMO, I need to be so valuable to my constituents that they don't believe that Florida as a state is going to do a better job than we would do at a local level. And so, from a storytelling perspective, this is a cautionary tale for every individual DMO that we have to be demonstrating to the community enough value to where they would never vote for allowing that funding to roll up to the state and trust the state with those dollars. So, that's number one. The second bill that you're saying they now want to reallocate that funding and say let's help everybody save on property tax. I agree with you. I think that's crazy. Your argument in the Ohio situation I think is perfect. But when you're looking at this from a residential perspective, how do we communicate so much value in tourism that the residents understand how short-sighted this is? Because maybe 2 years of income tax being, or excuse me, property tax being decreased is not equal to the value of the long-term impact of tourism on the destination as a whole. And if I understand that as a resident, I'm going to be less supportive of this idea of being able to reallocate the funds to property tax. And so I don't want us to just dismiss this as this is crazy, this is ridiculous. For one, I think this is a very real potential problem that every destination could face at some point. And those that are not doing a good job of representing what they're doing to the community on a consistent and ongoing basis, they are going to be at risk for this type of an event. This happens constantly at a local level. This may be the largest situation that I've seen in a long time, but this is a battle we've all got to fight for and communicate with our locals, or we're going to lose that battle when the time comes.
Yeah, I think this is the canary in the coal mine, 100%. Amir, you want to comment on that, and then I have some
Yeah,
thoughts.
Adam, you're spot on, my friend. It absolutely is. And what I didn't explain in the beginning part is the reasons behind all this have nothing to do with tourism. Nobody's quite they weren't really questioning the viability of the marketing organizations. There's a battle that's going on between the state and local levels over control of taxes, who gets to levy taxes, and so forth. Tourism, in this case, like in many times, is the victim of the drive-by shooting here. And they're looking for the, there's legislators that want to score a quick hit, get some good votes by reducing the tax burden, and they need to find pots of cash to fill the hole we're in, and that's and the message really isn't. Right now, I mean, the industry's out there, and there's a lot of messaging. Save the DMOs, save the, don't mess with the tourism model, don't mess with Florida's economic engine, and that's all fine and well. But at the end of the day, the emotional response really is the taxpayer, right? It's the taxpayer. To Adam, to your point about It takes years of education for the residents. It takes years of engagement with your community stakeholders to demonstrate your value and to the community that they wouldn't even entertain the thought of somebody messing with it, right? But this one and a quick hit like this that's coming out of left field in there, you got to fight fire with fire. And in that case, it is they're saying, hey, we're going to lower your property taxes. Well, the message from the industry back needs to be they're fooling you. You don't let them accidentally raise your taxes. What do you mean raise my taxes? They said lower my taxes. Yeah, well, do the math. It's only saving each, depending on where you live in Florida, it's saving each household about $20 to $60 a year on that. Is that going to radically change your lifestyle? Probably not.
But will no
In
more
there.
tourists change your lifestyle?
Right. But we'll
Absolutely.
loss of market share, $1 billion revenue. And oh, by the way, the economists that I've been seeing looking at this so far are saying that the sales tax would need to double or triple in the state just to help offset the deficit that would be created in short order by a loss of market share from the visitation and so forth. So, it's that thing. But you are absolutely spot on. This speaks to it's a long game. We need to do a better job with our voice, with our engagement, with our messaging, and then be prepared for the things that come out of left field.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of lessons to be had here, and I think it is the canary in the coal mine. I think we're going to become increasingly under threat, and our funding models are going to become increasingly under threat. And whether we agree with it, whether we think it's asinine, whether the saving, I think I did some monkey math this morning, and it's like the lowest county would save $20 per household. I think that the highest was up to $600, which is not insignificant, right? I think that's in like Orange County and stuff. But is that the county is that where Orlando is? Is it Orange County? So I think it's a spectrum. But here's the crux of the problem that DMOs have, right? We position ourselves as the marketing organization for a destination, solely that, right? So we're then expendable and replaceable. We're a commodity at that point. We're the only messenger when we're trying to defend something like this. Oftentimes, we're the one with the bullhorn, right? And it's hard for someone that isn't directly integrated with us and fully understand us to stand aside and say, well, obviously those guys are going to be crying from the rooftops if they're going to get defunded because it's the money that they're spending, right? It's self-interest. So what we've got to do is look at the bigger picture and say, how do we create a moat around us, a defensive position that other people will defend us, right? So in the case of Florida, I think it's about 2 million people employed in the hospitality industry, right? And so if you look at Florida, I think it's like a this I forget the numbers, but that's something like 10% of the total workforce in Florida, close to 10%. But the hospitality industry isn't in isolation. It drives other industries. It drives education because there's 2 million workers have children that are in education. It drives real estate because the people are living in that state. They're also the people that are moving to the state often travel to the state. It drives healthcare, right? So you've got to go and make the decision makers and the influencers in every major industry that's directly relying on tourism to become a stalwart defender of tourism. Because if you're there saying don't defund us, it's one thing. But if you have the medical industry and the healthcare, if you have the healthcare industry and the education industry and the real estate industry with your back, and then you've got to get the residents on your side. You've really got to, over long term, integrate with the residents at a level where they understand the value proposition. And it's not ROI on marketing. They don't care about that. It's quality of life metrics. How is tourism improving the quality of life? And now if you've got all of the residents in these massive industries that are paying these elected officials, right? Who's contributing to the elected officials, right? Beyond the tourism industry. Go find the influences of these elected officials, especially the ones that are the ones most negative towards tourism. Go sit down with their biggest influences and educate them because then they're the ones telling the message, not you. Like we can't be in isolation because if we are, we're going to lose this fight. And
Sure.
this is the tip of the spear. If Florida goes, man, it's going to become the poster child for every anti-tourism legislature out there and
And
rural
we
doomsday.
can't wait, Stuart. We cannot wait until Florida is suddenly threatening the funding. The time to build that moat was 20 years ago, but if you screwed that up, Now's the time to start. And you need to understand who has the most influence in your destination. You need to make sure they understand your value. And then you still need some sort of communication strategy, intentional communication strategy. And I know we kind of beat this dead horse in the New Year's resolutions episode that we did earlier this year. But you need to know who your community members are, who your residents are, and you need to understand what they want and need, and you need to message that on a consistent basis.
Yeah, 100%. So, I mean, go help Florida. Everyone in the industry right now, voice your concerns. If you have any influence, any pull, whether you're in tourism or not, like this is an existential crisis for us as DMOs. And I think I can't believe I'm saying this out loud, because I heard a couple of people that are not from Florida this year sort of saying, well, if Florida gets defunded, that's good for my destination because fewer people will be going to Florida. And it's such a short-sighted view of this macro problem, because if Florida does go down, it's only a matter of time before the next state and the next state and the next state does the same thing. So we're
Well,
all in
and
this fight together.
there are
Amen.
innumerable private businesses that will also go if Florida gets
Yeah.
defunded. I can think of at least three agencies that, if Florida gets defunded, will no longer be able to service our industry. And
Yeah.
that is a problem. And so it goes far beyond just the destination marketing organization. It's the entire ecosystem.
Yep. Yep.
The other
Yep. Yep.
short-sighted sightedness in this is that, yeah, the legislature is going to sunset on May 2nd. So if the bills don't pass the full vote of the House and the Senate before May 2nd, they're not happening. So everybody's focused on, kill it by May 2nd and we're good to go. People
It's a
forget.
hydra, man. That head will come back.
Exactly. There's always the next legislative cycle. Somebody's going to remember that one. Somebody might decide to pick it up, and there you go. So for the long term, gentlemen, this is a war.
It is. And we're in it. We support our Floridian friends for sure. All right. So
Absolutely.
let's talk about, we're talking about our Floridian friends. Let's talk about our friends north of the border. So Amir, this is like the Amir episode. You're going to set this up a little bit too. So everyone obviously knows Longwood's for doing amazing ROI studies, and you've been doing a really good study on the sort of the pulse of the industry since COVID. It was, or before COVID, or around COVID is when you guys started that, for over 5 years now, which is really influential to us. I mean, we've used so many slides out of your decks for our presentations. So we really appreciate you guys doing that as a resource for the industry at no cost to the industry, by the way, which I think Miles is the one that helps to support you guys with that, right? The financial side. So we really, really appreciate it. It helps us make better, smarter decisions. So you guys have recently revealed a Canadian study that you did. So let's dive into that. Firstly, were you surprised by what you found from the Canadian study?
Well, first of all, thanks for being my publicist, Stu. I appreciate
Yeah.
that. No. Yeah, my ego just got inflated. No, my team will be happy to hear that. But I'm glad you find it all valuable. A quick backgrounder is, we started the American Travel Sentiment Study. It was a COVID tracker. It was a COVID sentiment tracker. It launched in the end of February 2020. Just because we had no idea what this was going to do, right, to our industry, and we needed some guideposts, so we did that. Miles came on board as a supporter. It's been they've been helping us offset the, we have they have fund our the fielding costs for this with us for 5 years now, and we really are appreciative of their partnership on this, so we can make it a free tool for the industry. Well, fast forward, we have 2025. A new administration comes in January in the White House. A lot of statements are being made, some new policy pronouncements, a little bit of rhetoric, a lot of rhetoric at times. And all of a sudden, we start seeing the numbers start falling from Canada to the US. And immediately, my phone starts ringing and everybody's like, do you have any data on the Canadians? What's going to happen with the Canadians? And I said, well, hold on, this is all brand new. Well, let's give it a minute in there. And there were a few firms out there up in Canada and a few others that did a few quick flash polls of Canadian travelers or Canadian residents and their attitudes towards the US or travel visiting the US. And but they were catching a lot of very quick knee-jerk reaction type of stuff, right? You know, if you know if you know if somebody insulted your mother, Adam, and they wanted to, you know, and
Are
you know
you
you want
listening, Stuart? I've never insulted your mother. I used your
Oh,
mother to
never,
insult you.
if somebody insulted Adam's mother and asked Adam, you know, what was he going to do to that guy, he said, I'm going to kill him, right? You know, but Adam had no intention of going to jail for 25, 30 years. So at the end of the day, you know, what people say they're going to do and what they do are sometimes different. And you don't want to get just the knee jerk. You want to let the emotion die down just a little bit and kind of see, you know, when they start acting, you know, with rationale on their emotions, what's happening there. So we actually scripted up a Canadian traveler sentiment study to measure Canadian travel sentiment towards travel specifically to the US. We had it scripted about a month and a half ago. And we actually held off because we wanted to wait past the tariff deadline of April 2nd. We wanted to get a couple weeks past that just to kind of get the pure emotion down, let the rhetoric die down a little bit, and let's see what happens. So we just fielded this last week. We came out of the field. We saw some great data there. And Stu, answer your question finally. Were we surprised? I think yes and no is the right answer. Yes. Or no, we'll start with the no first. No, in that obviously there is an issue. Now, I don't have hard data to compare pre the crisis because we didn't, you know, we didn't know that was coming. But so we didn't have a benchmark. So this is the baseline study. But you know, as expected, the Canadians aren't that thrilled with us at the moment. There is clearly a percentage that are having issues with travel to the US right now, in their consideration set. That part didn't surprise us. What did surprise us was they were very clear in saying this wasn't purely emotional. Part of it was also the exchange rate. Part of it was other things, in there. And what we, you know, so we knew we were going to get, you know, I mean, it doesn't take brain surgery to figure out we were probably going to get some negative response and feedback on this. What we really set out to do in this one, though, is to start this as a benchmark to see if there is any potential longer term impact about the US being an aspirational destination for Canadians. Because if we, you know, it's one thing, you know, I mean, political blips happen, things, you know, hiccups happen, you know, crises happen, and, you know, a few months pass or a year or two passes, and then things are back to normal quite often in cycles. What happens if we start falling off the aspiration list? If parents start telling your kids, you don't need to go see the Grand Canyon. You don't need to come to Myrtle Beach. You don't need to go to, you know, Disney. It's not that great. Or they got one in Europe, you know, or something like that. That changes the mindset of a generation. And then we got a bigger problem on our hands in there. And the one thing we always tout on, good times and bad times, is that the US has always been one of the most aspirational destinations in the world. So we got some interesting figures here. And that part did surprise us a little bit.
So before we jump into the figures, we're going to put a link to this in the show notes so people can go download it. But then where else can they, can they go to the Longwood site to download it, or do you have a landing page?
Longwoodsinternational.com. Just go to the Longwoods International website. We'll put it on our links on our social media channels, and so forth. And depending what time you're listening to this cast, it all gets released April 29th. So I
Yep,
think.
so this will come out right after that. So you should be available now. So if you want to follow along at home when Amy is talking about some of these stats, feel free to go pause this, go download that. Now, I will say you touched on something that's really important. So I'm going to play a little bit devil's advocate in this episode, in that I believe that the exchange rate is a bigger problem than any of the rhetoric. I think the tariffs, all this stuff is a temporary noise problem, and I think it's getting the blame. But good friend of the show, being on the show before, and the previous CEO of Visit Myrtle Beach, Brad Dean, commissioned a study, I think about 6, 7 years ago now, here for our destination. And we tried to identify the correlation between the exchange rate and visitation. And there was a 1-to-1 correlation. So we went back and looked historically at at both of those data points, and it was 1-to-1. And so with the exchange rate right now having the Canadian dollar really weak against the US dollar, I think it's sitting around 1.4 right now. It's the highest it's been in over 20 plus years, right? It used to sit in the sort of early 2000s, it was around 1-to-1. It was close to parity. And then it was sort of that for the last decade, it's been around 1.2. So for us to be at like 1.4 plus, or even just a smidge under that right now, maybe, to me, that's a big problem. We recently had our Can-Am Days, our 67th annual Can-Am Days here in Myrtle Beach. We invite Canadians down. We have representation in Canada. We've had a very good long relationship with Canada. And we had a lot of people here. Now, spending was down a little bit for the months of February and March, only about 20% for Canadians, which wasn't too bad. It was probably less than we thought. We're a little more worried about next year than this year because, candidly, a lot of Canadians were already here. We get a lot of the snowbirds that'll come in November before all the noise started, right? So we're sort of looking to see what's going to happen next year to see if it's more impactful. But we had a real good opportunity to sit down and talk with a lot of Canadians, and we learned a lot. Like, one, they were very surprised how welcomed they were. Like, there was a fear that the media had whipped up, which was people from Canada weren't welcome in America. And that's not the case, never has been, never will be the case, right? And so when they were getting off their buses and we were greeting them with smiles and handshakes, they just said, "We love the warm welcome. We weren't expecting this," right? So I think there is sort of an emotional propaganda war going on. When we asked them about their thoughts, a lot of people would, rumble about Trump and rumble about tariffs and stuff. But when we really challenged them, like, what are your biggest concerns? It all came down to economics. Like, so I think it's like this, the emotional side is they're trying to rationalize their decisions, right? They're making the decisions financially, but they're trying to rationalize it with the other stuff because it's an easier argument to say, "Well, I don't like the rhetoric," than it is to say, "I can't afford to come," right? There's just less friction in that argument. So I don't think the rhetoric has had as big an impact, but I do think, and I'm glad to see in your results, that it does seem like Canadians still want to come to America. So do you want to just jump into some of the data and we'll see what story it tells?
So I'll pick up where you left off there, Stu. I think the reality is, and I think you're spot on, and I'll show this in the data here in just a second, that the Canadian traveler was already on the fence, and it was because of economic reasons. They were already on the fence. The rhetoric, the tariffs, the policy shifts, and all that just gave them that was a tipping point, right?
Yeah, it was the excuse they needed, right?
It pushed them over the edge. So that's what it was. What was it, the driving force? No, because the economic market was already pushing them that way. The tipping point was the rhetoric. So let's talk about that. Let's start with the good news because I like a little positive. Start with the positive there. On the plus side, there's definitely strong intent to travel among Canadians. So despite everything else, Canadians still want to travel. We asked them, and 4 out of 5 Canadians told us that they got plans to go somewhere in the next 6 months. So this, even the economic challenges, 8 out of 10 Canadian travelers are still going to go somewhere. But of those, 39%, so almost 4 out of 10 Canadian travelers told us that they either plan to visit in the U.S. to visit the U.S. in the next year, or they've already booked their trip. So again, a significant portion is still planning to come to the U.S. So again, that's all good news.
Now, we don't have a benchmark to compare that
We
to, right? We
don't
don't.
have that
Right.
benchmark because believe me, and if I was a smarter man in November, December, would have seen this train wreck coming, I would have
Right.
immediately put something in the field just to baseline it, but we weren't
Yeah,
there.
but that feels good to me. That feels like a solid number. I don't know what the typical percentage is, but 4 out of 10 is significant, right?
And let me preface saying all this, folks, before you start thinking one way or the other, we plan on repeating this survey a few times next year. So we're committed to that already. We are going to do that. So use this as the benchmark. Let's see where it goes. All right. So conversely, so I'll show you some good news. Unfortunately, the plans to visit the U.S. are being reevaluated by those Canadian travelers. 36% of those that we surveyed report having canceled already a planned trip to the U.S. So that's a pretty high number. That one, honestly, that was a little higher than I thought it would be. in there, especially when we're talking not just immediately, we're talking about, the rest of the year. So that was pretty high. And then another 29% indicated that they are postponing a trip they currently had planned. So they're not canceling outright, but they're just going to delay that trip. Okay. So where are they going? Well, they're choosing alternative destinations, obviously, those 36% that have already canceled. 40% are listening to what their leadership has been telling them, which was stay in Canada this year, travel Canada. So 40% of them are telling us that they're replacing the US trip with a domestic getaway. Okay, that's expected. 27% are choosing to go abroad elsewhere. And Europe and Mexico are, according to what they're telling us, are the most popular alternative destinations for them. So that's who we're competing with on that. But again, why? Why are you changing? Where are you going? So again, let's go to the rhetoric. Again, 60% of Canadians are telling us that the US policies and politics are making them less likely to visit currently. So when we dig a little deeper and ask why and give them the options, 79% blame it on tariffs, and 64% are blaming it on political statements made by US le political leaders. And they'll lead the pack, and you can figure out all the rest. However, again, going back to your point, Stuart, because I think you hit the nail on the head, it's really important that we note that 47%, so there's half of the Canadian travelers we surveyed, also reporting that the exchange rate is a key factor in their reduced interest to travel to the US. It's not just the politics. They were on the fence, and this just gave them the excuse to, okay, we're going to do a little elsewhere. Guess what? Mexico's a little less expensive than traveling to the US right now. So we're going to go to Mexico, and that's what we're seeing right there. But the last bit of data I want to get into on this, and then we can have a little more dialogue, which is really, but talking about the aspirational aspect, right? So we need to benchmark. We need to benchmark that. We need to kind of see where we are. And there was an area of particular concern that stuck out to us, and that's the perception of being seen as welcoming. And Stuart, I love that example that you talked about from your Can-Am days, that they all came there a little skeptical, and all of a sudden they received that warm welcome, and that touched them, because only 42% of the Canadians we surveyed strongly feel that we're a welcoming destination personally. Only 42, only 4 out of 10 currently feel that way. So the perception gap, right? On the bright side, though, again, talking from an aspirational perspective, we're still in a leading position in Canadian travel perceptions because they see us as a diverse and attractive international destination. In fact, 8 out of 10, over 80% said that they believe the US has lots of great things to see and do. And 57% strongly agree with the statement that it's a place that they'd really enjoy visiting. So we're in a good position. Again, I don't know if that position has dropped a little bit or not. I suspect it probably has, and we've felt it before, but the welcoming part. And that's a real easy fix from talking about from the marketers. What do we do about this? That's a real easy fix to roll out the welcome mat.
So let's sort of segue into that. Like, no, so, like, so, we know this. So what? Now what? Right? What do we do about it? And I think you just you indicated what our philosophy is. So I'll tell you what Visit Myrtle Beach is doing, and then you guys can say if we're crazy or if there's other ideas out there. So we have a dedicated budget for Canadian travelers. It's our number one international destination. We don't get a ton of international travel. We're like 95% domestic, but of the 5%, the majority of those are coming from Canada, UK, and Germany. And so for Canadians, we have a dedicated agency in Canada called Pulse Communications. They do a phenomenal job. They attend the shows on our behalf. They're working with the media up in Canada. So we have a presence, and we have a dedicated media budget that we spend advertising. One of the things we saw early on, especially when the Canadian media was really ratcheting this up, and you got to put this in context too, there's a big incentive for Canadian media to whip this up because of all the political craziness going on up there right now, right? Changing of prime minister, snap elections. Trudeau had the lowest approval rating of any Canadian prime minister for forever. Like, you've got massive economic concerns in Canada where their richest provinces are now less wealthy than the poorest states in America, and going from being much in a much higher position than that just 10 years ago. So they have their own struggles, and the media has been sort of looking for blame. And so Trump was an easy out. I mean, did he help himself? Probably not. But there was obviously incentives within Canada to whip this up and create a little bit of Canadian
Yes.
pride and stay in Canada and all that stuff. So there's the context. So what we saw was we were running, standard sort of media mix, social media, programmatic, all that you would expect. We were seeing on social media, we were getting a lot of negative dialogue. Just a lot of people just jumping on the bandwagon and just railing America. It wasn't about Myrtle Beach. It was just Trump, America, da da da. So we pulled back from social media in terms of our paid media, and we shifted that into to other areas. And the messaging has just been one of welcomeness. We're ready when you're ready, and that kind of stuff. It's not too dissimilar to our strategy, our ready, set, go strategy during COVID, which, big brag, although I wasn't here when they developed this. It was Scott Schultz, my predecessor. They had a ready, set, go strategy with MMGY for COVID, where we said, we're ready when you're ready. Okay, now if you want to start planning, we're here. And then it's, hey, come on and visit us. And so I think that's the same strategy we're applying here with Canadians. It's like, you're welcome here anytime. I understand right now might not be the right time, but when you're ready, we're ready. And then we're going to be top of mind. A lot of people are pulling out of Canada in terms of media. Every white paper that's ever been written on what happens during a downturn, and this is how we're looking at this, is a downturn in demand from a specific market. Put more dollars in. Continue to be top of mind, and you will gain tremendous market share. So that's my advice to our American counterparts, is do not pull out of Canada. Do not neglect it, even if you're seeing a massive downturn right now, because we're not playing a game just today in 2025. We're playing the long game. And if you pull out now, it's going to take you years or more to heal from that. And so that's our approach, at least.
Yeah.
So I'd love to get your feedback. Love to see if you have other ideas as well.
Yeah, I think anytime you look at data, there's going to be things that you can get upset about, and then there's things that you can control. And I think you really have to divide out those two, because there's plenty in that data. If Canadian travelers are a big part of our traveler base, there's plenty to be upset about in the findings of that survey. But the one that, and Amir, you zeroed in on it, the welcoming issue, right? That's a very actionable data point. Now, the one thing that I would say is I don't think it's a good idea for every destination to look and say, I want to do this big Canada campaign where every single destination in the country is messaging to Canada, you're welcome here, right? Because then you're just going to get lost in the noise. And so I think, first of all, you need an evaluation of how important to our destination is the Canadian traveler. And I think that varies by destination, right? So number one is identify, is this market important enough for us to dedicate a major initiative or major dollars towards it? And a lot of destinations are going to say, yes, the Canadian traveler is critical to our destination. And then what you have to do is figure out, from a marketing perspective, how can you do something unique and different that's going to demonstrate that you are very welcoming to the Canadian traveler. And I don't know, I think the scary thing here is, number one, is you could get kind of an overinvestment on this when, like you said, there's a likelihood that it could all blow over either when the exchange rate changes or when the political climate calms down, the discussion calms down. And so I would just make a very clear evaluation of what is the right investment to make in the long-term Canadian traveler for your destination, and then come up with a very unique and different initiative to try to demonstrate how welcome the Canadian traveler is in your destination.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you both make really great points. And I think, Adam, I don't think you have to worry about the crowded noise so much, because I've already heard from several major destinations that they're just going silent right now. A little bit of PR, just kind of saying, putting a little welcome message, but they're pulling media dollars. And Stu, you're right. Everybody, I mean, it's textbook. That's when you double down, or
Yeah.
that's when you go in, because guess what? They will remember. They will remember when they feel like coming
Right.
back. They will remember, and that's and that halo, so to speak, is very powerful and very emotive. Yeah, Adam, you're right. You know, evaluate it. If Canadian market's important to you, keep resources there, but find your point of differentiation and how you give that welcome message. And the welcome,
Yeah.
absolutely within your control.
Yeah.
In there, how you convey that welcome is absolutely within your control. And the experience that you offer while they're here, that's within your control. And so, working with your partners, your stakeholders to what type of, you know, is there some type of, you know, again, the economy, it's the economy first. And the rhetoric and the politics being the excuse, okay, fine. In there, what type of ways can you demonstrate to show added value to the Canadian traveler right now? That's what I'd be focused on, the welcoming message, and here's some value. By the way, we know it's, hey, you know what? We're your brother south of the border. Our economy, you know, we're feeling the pinch too. You know, but here's what we're gonna do. We'll give you some value.
Yeah, and that's one of the messages we're sort of doing, the double pronged of welcoming and affordability and focusing on the things. You know, you can start come spend as much time on the beach for free as you want, you know. So pointing out the things you can do in Myrtle Beach that aren't going to break the bank is really important. I think the other piece to this, Adam, you touched on, you know, controlling what you can control, which I'm a big fan of, but I also think you should try to influence what you can influence, right? So we're not going to influence the president's position on tariffs necessarily, or at least most of us aren't. But maybe we can influence our local media, right? Maybe we can work with them to influence our community to be extra welcoming when Canadians come, our workforce, you know. And so one of the comments we were hearing from folks was, we not just that we didn't think we were going to be welcome, but we thought people were going to be outwardly hostile towards us. And so, you know, and there are people that are. I mean, if you look on social media, there's sort of a war of words going back as Canadians are attacking Trump. There's people defending Trump, right? So there is some hostility online, which you're always going to find, but you've got to make sure that doesn't manifest in your community. And so make sure the media is positive. So when we had our Can-Am days, you know, the media were aware of it. We even had the New York Times show up to one of our events because they're trying to figure out like what we're doing. We had the Canadian consulate here, like, and this is in March when this is really at its fever pitch. And so, in all of that, we had a big drop backdrop, including a sign in the New York Times, in the cover of an article in the New York Times that said, "Canadians love the beach, and the beach loves Canadians." You know, so we just got to say, hey, we're not above the fray of what's going on, but it's separate. You know, we're not the problem. We're not contributing to the problem. Vacation is a place where you can escape from the divisiveness and the rhetoric. And when you're ready to travel, come to Myrtle Beach. That's the message. So we're going to stay very active. I mean, are we spending as much this year as we did last year in Canada? Probably not quite as much, but it's pretty close, you know. So we're definitely not going dark. Have our tactics shifted? Absolutely. Are we doing a lot more sort of PR storytelling stuff than paid media, traditional paid media? Absolutely. We got things like their version of the Weather Channel's coming down to Myrtle Beach to shoot some segments to air later in the year, you know? So we're doing some of that more sort of block and tackle, but hand-to-hand stuff versus just sort of a regular paid media strategy. But it's all about how do we meet Canadians and have a conversation? Because if we can have a conversation, then they can really understand our intent, and we can get above or beside the rhetoric and not get consumed by
So and remember, not all Canadians are the same, right? They all have different
it.
opinions. They all have different angles. Yes, there's an issue of national pride right now, but it's the pocketbook first. And let me prove my point to you, gentlemen, because I think this is a good comic relief point in our conversation on this, which is we asked the question: are current U.S. government policies, trade practices, and/or political statements influencing you to change your travel plans to the U.S. in the next 12 months? And I already told you that 60% of the Canadians said that they are less likely to visit the U.S. due to the policy and politics in there. But I will tell you that 7% of Canadian surveys, 7%, said yes, it makes me more likely to travel to the U.S. Everybody's got a fan club, I tell you.
Those are the anti-Trudeau people, I would imagine. That's phenomenal. That's phenomenal. Well, Amir, this has been great. We really appreciate you sharing your wisdom and your data. And if folks, again, if you want to remind them where they can get, we'll put the link in the show notes to the study, but they can
Just
find
go to the
more where.
Longwoods International website, longwoodsinternational.com, or any of our social media channels. We'll find it there.
And if you're not following Amir on LinkedIn, you should. He's always putting out some pearls of wisdom out there. So he's a great follow. One of the biggest thought leaders in the industry. And so we appreciate him being the twice repeat, the second repeat guest on the show. So
Three
thank
times
you.
do I get a jacket?
I don't know.
Ooh.
We're gonna have to see which one of you pays us more, you or Will, to see who gets the
I
three.
mean, Adam's always got the good ball caps. You need a Destination Discourse ball cap or something that we then
Yeah,
get.
we might need to get that. He
You know
might
what? I like
get
that.
me to wear one. Yeah,
I like that.
for sure. Well, Mia, if they want to reach out to you, what's the best way to do it?
Just either through social media, LinkedIn, or aalon@longwoods-intl.com.
And then any final words of wisdom for our audience before we leave?
The sky is not falling, people. The sky is not falling, but we got to be on guard. There's always going to be a crisis. Just remember that. It's about
Yeah.
how are we prepared? How are we able to mobilize? And if we're doing a good job telling our story and engaging our stakeholders, we're going to win in the end.
Great. I love it. Adam, they want to find you. Where can they do that?
Find me on Tourism IQ or adam@thebrandrevolt.com. And Amir, you just got me thinking a little bit when you said that there's a lot of big destinations pulling back in Canada. Warren Buffett always says, when there's fear in the market, buy. And maybe that means that it's a good time if the Canadian market is a critical market for you as a destination, do something crazy. And maybe you get a chance to gain some market share. Even if volume goes down, if you can gain market share, you'll be able to keep your numbers steady.
Winston Churchill said, never let a good crisis go to waste.
Yeah, 100%. Agree with you, gentlemen. Well, appreciate you, everyone tuning in. Please leave a review, subscribe, tell a friend. We're really growing as a show, and we couldn't do that without you. And what do we call them, Adam? The destination. They're our desties. Is that what we're calling them?
Desties.
We need to use that more in the show, so it becomes a real thing. We're trying to make fetch a thing, but you can reach me on LinkedIn, Stuart Butler, or you can email me stuart.butler@visitmortalbeach. And until next time. This has been Destination Discourse.
Thanks, everybody.
You know what? You gave me a good practice run of telling the story on that, so that was good.